Good morning, I'm Councilwoman Lisa Diller. This is the Newcastle County Council's Aging Subcommittee, and if we can go around the room and just say our name for the record, that would be great.
Anthony DiFiore, Legislative Aide to the Council President.
Deborah Young, Empowerability.
Alan Mattis, Department of Community Services.
Karen Comrie, Brandywine Village Network.
Maggie Retnayaka, Brandywine Village Network.
Susan Moore, Legislative Aide, Councilwoman Diller.
And thanks to Susan, she was gracious enough to work on setting this up. And this is her first meeting because Renee left in March and Susan started the next day, and we've sort of been in transition. So it's good to get back on the work. You know, if you could just take a look at the minutes, most of you, I'm not even sure we need an approval because we're a subcommittee, but if you want to take a look at the minutes and tell me if there's anything that you see that needs to be changed, if you...
They don't have minutes.
Can we get a copy?
I was going to say, I don't have another copy. I meant to bring a copy.
Oh, you don't have... Oh.
They don't have minutes. The council members have minutes.
Go ahead and copy them.
This is good.
Or I can give people...
That's okay.
I did read them, though, previously, and I do approve.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure we actually need to approve. We just need to keep them as record. But since you guys are coming up to speed, we'll just make sure that you get copies of that. So that would be really good. But what happened, just for the folks who have joined us, we had the last big issue that we dealt with was really the universal design legislation that passed in January. And then we sort of went into a... Hi, good morning.
Hi.
We went into a bit of a hiatus as Renee, who was my previous legislative aide, left and Susan got started. And so, you know, it took us a while then to think, where do we want to go next? And I actually had talked to two of the members, Bob Hall and Chris Oakes. Bob works with the Ecumenical Council as the pastor of the local Methodist church. And then Chris actually works for the, is it DSAPAD, the Department of Services
for Aging and
Physical Disabilities, I believe is the acronym from the state. And we were looking at just the whole issue of senior services as we move to the future. I mean, we know what's happening. I mean, certainly there are budget constraints that nobody could have imagined, say, 10 years ago. But I think we need to take a look at where we got the seniors and where we want to move with this. So if anybody has any questions, just go ahead and about the minutes. Otherwise, let's just move on to our beautiful maps, which we thank Community Services for producing. Does everybody have a copy of this? Okay. See the lines on these maps. Folks, what you've got on the top page is really it's the senior population in Newcastle County overlaid on the council districts with census tracts. So there's a lot of information right in here, and the challenge for the people who are the council people is to figure out where all these lines are and where their council district and their stops, census tracts start, because they don't always overlap each other. So the major concern that I think we have here is taking a look at the census tracts, particularly those tracts that are identified in yellow on this sheet that are low to moderate income seniors. And I do not know the magic of how community service produced these reports, but I am deeply grateful because it gives us information about where we are going to see where we have current low mod seniors and where I think we're going to continue to see growth in low and moderate income seniors. One of the things that I know Jane Rattini from Allen's office had mentioned is that at some point they want to overlay this data with existing senior centers to start with.
Right.
And one of the reasons why, if that is something that we could do for a future meeting, why that would be useful is that, for example, the folks from the Brandywine Village Project have been, you have operated out of Jewish Family Services in north of Wilmington, but you know, I guess my question about the village projects is that something that could be operated out of a senior center, that kind of thing? Does that happen in other places?
It does. There's different styles of villages that have popped up in communities across the country. Some are operating in senior living developments, and so that's kind of from their headquarters or their main office there. Some are through senior centers, some are just community. So where there's no central location or central organization backing them up, they just say, here is a community and we're going to support. So there's really a number of models that are in place successfully.
Kim, I saw you sneak in here.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming. This is Kim Iapolucci from AARP. Mm-hmm. And I know that you guys have been, are you creating your legislative agenda or your agenda for this year? Is that...
Yeah, we're in the planning process for 2014.
Okay.
So I'm working with Brian Posey, our advocacy director, to identify some issues that we can sort of sink our teeth into in 2014.
And then Becky, do you want to give an update on what you're doing with?
I'm currently getting my doctorate in social work.
Okay.
And I am in the proposal phase. I finished my coursework, and I'm now proposing a dissertation.
But prior to that, you did work.
Prior to that, I worked at Jewish Family Services. Yes.
Okay. So that's how, you know, you've been connected with us for a couple of years,
yeah.
Which has been
yeah.
very helpful. One of the things that I would like to look at is that as we see on these sheets, I mean, I know that I have a lot of seniors who are moving beyond, you know, the service level of, say, the Newark Senior Center, mm-hmm. and how we look at additional services mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is part of the issue. I mean, right now you have, you know, baby boomers who are retiring. You have, I mean, the Newark Senior Center is the closest thing to full services that we have, you know, in the area that we're in, unless you move into, say, an assisted living facility. But I think that the question is that as these people age, what are we thinking about putting into place to really help move services to places where they're needed? I think, and Kim, I don't know if you've got any information about this, but we were talking about the whole issue of new health care laws and how does that impact services in the home to help people age in place. I mean, do you know that information? You know.
Well, actually, funny you should mention that. Could I take this opportunity to pass something out?
Sure, absolutely.
You might want to take one and pass this around. We have some really nice, these are national, these aren't custom to Delaware, but... We've actually, locally here in Delaware, I've partnered with the United Way. I was named Delaware's lead for Affordable Care Act education for AARP. So we have a bunch of activities that we've created to educate Delawareans on the Affordable Care Act and how the insurance marketplace affects them. And so we're very focused on, of course, the benefits to long-term care mm-hmm. and the caregiving piece of that. So I partnered with the United Way, and I'm working with Tanetta Brown, who is their healthcare lead person. And so we're doing some events and things like that. But there's a real need for people to be educated on some of the benefits that the Affordable Care Act has given people, like better access to prevention, mm-hmm. which is something people aren't always aware of. And it's not just the 50 to 64 demographic. There's actually an annual wellness visit that was put into Medicare as a result of the Affordable Care Act that people don't always know about. So,
no, go ahead. I was just going to... I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's okay.
to piggyback on that, Alan Mattis with Community Services, we're looking at the libraries as an institution
yes.
and an informational center for elderly on, and actually for everybody on the new.
That's a really great idea.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's part of our overall plan to increase libraries as a place for just books and DVDs, but community center kind of mm-hmm. environment. That said, we're looking to team up possibly with Westside Health and have that information available, not just to sit out, but actually have people there to discuss it with individuals mm-hmm. coming in, and it kind of. Situation that it's informational neutral in the sense of, you know, we're not representing anybody, nor is Westside, but it's such a complex situation that it's our hope to boil it down to plain English so individuals get a better sense of what's going on. So we'll be discussing that within the administration. Hopefully, if it all works out, surely we'll be able to roll that out in the library system.
That's excellent.
Well, Westside Health has been named one of the official yeah. guides for the state, and AARP wants to make it very known that, you know, we're not guides and we're not navigators.
Right.
We're not really giving advice as to which plan people should choose, but we are giving people the information that they need to make the best decisions for them and their families. So there's also a big intergenerational piece with this, because the grandparents want to know how this is going to affect their grandkids. Are they going to, what's all this about a penalty that they're going to get? And, you know, they just need some clarity with all of that. So AARP has really quite a good array of tools that we're going to use. In fact, we're having a big event at the Newark Senior Center on November 1st. And we're going to do a PowerPoint on how the ACA has strengthened Medicare. And I'm trying to get someone from the state and also someone from Joanne Grossi's camp to be at that event to answer some of the nitty-gritty questions that we don't always have the answers to. You know, AARP, we're not direct service providers. Mm-hmm. So we can't always answer all of the questions that come up at these kinds of events. But I think that there's a real, the informational piece is big right now.
Yeah.
You know, and people will... And the other issue that's coming up for us is the transportation piece. Mm-hmm. We're looking at that a little more closely because there's some talk, there was an article in the Dover Post last week, in fact, there's some talk about cutting some of the funding for paratransit, mm-hmm. and it would affect seniors primarily. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it is rumor right now, but some people are saying, well, paratransit was designed for people with disabilities. So they, you know, older people should just drive.
Yeah.
You know, we can't accommodate them anymore. It's too expensive for the state. So that might be an issue we take on, because that's a big problem. I mean, transportation is
it's huge
in Delaware. I mean, we are a driving state, mm-hmm. and that's a big problem. Access for seniors to doctors, to, you know, grocery stores. And well, so we're tracking that issue. Yeah,
I'm going to piggyback on that.
If I may, could you state your name for the record before sure. you speak? Sure. That makes sure. it easier mm-hmm. for the recording. Thank
sure.
you.
This is Deborah Young, Empowerability. I'm just going to piggyback on that because I know that there's a lot going on with Delaware and looking at how areas that are in the process of being developed and trying to develop them as complete communities. And part of that is discussing the issue of transportation, because men outlive their driving years by 8 years, women outlive their driving years by 10 years. So it's not just a matter of, well, seniors should just be driving because they're outliving their driving years and they can't drive. It's a matter of, you know, looking at the housing that's needed and then how that development is set up to make sure that those services are in place. Just to piggyback on that. The other thing is that I know that Delaware is the community-based waiver program for persons who are Medicaid eligible. They have services now that allow for in-home service care that is paid for through Medicaid, which is through the state actually pushed it out. It's two HMOs that are doing it. It's United Healthcare and Aetna. And those persons that are eligible for Medicaid can be eligible for the in-home services because they're getting it that it's more expensive to instead send people to a long-term care facility right. instead be able to help them at home. So there is that service. And then there is the Delaware Innovation Grant, which is specific to healthcare and essentially is money that Delaware received right now in the initial phase to be able to determine what the needs are for the state from a healthcare perspective and put a plan forward to then be able to get the secondary pot of money to put that plan into effect.
And is that with DSAPAD?
I believe they are one of the state agencies involved in that.
Is that the CMMI grant?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. I've been going to the public meetings for that.
Yes.
And it sounds like they're really putting quite a good plan in place.
Yeah.
Rita is heading that up.
That's
actually,
right.
Along with Bettina Riveros, yeah.
DHSS.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to also piggyback on some of the transportation issues that you were talking about. One of the places in my district is the Marydale Senior Center, and Representative Edosinski and I attend their monthly meetings. And the tenants there, most of whom are still driving, one of the issues that we've run into is this is a senior citizens complex. I mean, I don't know, Sue, how many units do you think they have? I would say at least 70, maybe 80 units, right? And these are all seniors, for the most part, who are driving. The problem is that these guys are coming out of, you know, their driveway from the center, and there's a hill coming down this way, and there's no light. Mm-hmm. And both Representative Osinski and Senator Townsend have tried to work with DLDOT to get the light. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, well, there's not enough traffic. And one of the things I said to Ed after the last meeting, I'm like, Ed, here's the deal. You have a whole community full of senior citizens. They are driving. We know that the reflexes are more slow. We know that people's eyesight isn't what it used to be. Is that being taken into account by DLDOT when they look at, you know, deciding whether or not there's a traffic signal?
No.
The answer is no. And so there's part of, and I said to him, how can this be? I mean, you are developing this whole, you know, whole villages of senior citizens, and you are not taking into account that aspect of, you know, changes through the life cycle when you're talking about traffic. I mean, traffic isn't just traffic when you're 80 and you're driving. And so it just seems to me that if you've got transportation on, you know, the list of issues, how we look at aging, you know, in our communities and what the impact is going to be on traffic, it's much broader than just picking people up and dropping people off. It has to do with how people are going to be able to drive in order to keep them driving, you know. But it, you know, these people have been pleading. I mean, I've been going to the meetings for 2 years, and they've been pleading for a stoplight because they know that it's harder for them to get out, particularly to make these left turns, than it is, you know, to just leave and go on a right-hand turn. But if nobody takes into consideration the slowed reflexes and the eyesight issues, you know, we're really not doing due diligence when we make a decision about what we're doing about traffic. So that isn't even a county issue. But it is, you know, a future issue in terms of transportation.
Yeah.
And how we negotiate all of this. I mean, no, I guess you don't want a stoplight on every corner, but when you have a collection of people in one place, it seems to me that, some credence to the needs of seniors ought to be put into place when we're considering how we make decisions about traffic signals.
Absolutely. I think that the quality of the roadways, well, that, of course, contributes to walkability.
Right, right.
How can a mother with a baby in a stroller walk across the street when a car zips around, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that especially in Sussex County, this becomes an issue where the poor quality of the roadways on these farm tracks comes into play. It's harder for the seniors to drive on that. The quality of the signage is a big issue. The flow of the traffic, is it a roundabout, you know? Is it a very sharp kind of turn? All of these things come into play when you talk about a senior person who's driving. And, you know, AARP does support helping people be able to drive as long as they can. I mean, we want people to age with independence. That's why we have the whole driver safety initiative.
Right.
It's a volunteer run national program, and in Delaware, they teach thousands of people every year how to drive longer and more safer. So we do support that, but there's the other component where, you know, they can't drive anymore, so they need to stay independent.
Right.
And age successfully then too, you know.
Yeah, so. I mean, I would see with this particular committee, you know, that if we can raise these issues, I mean, this is just a real practical issue. Where's the stoplight, you know? And kind of, if you're looking at transportation, AARP would be the folks to take that, and we should play a supporting role. But I could just tell you that that is a huge issue for all those folks who live in that little community. I mean, you know, and, you know, we can do things around, you know, county issues, but we can't really move into the state issues. You know, we don't really have that authority, but I think it helps to raise them in the committee.
I think that, well, for example, the ordinance that we worked with you to have passed with Universal Design.
Can you state your name, please?
Yes, sorry, Kim Appalucci from AARP.
Thank you.
I think that was something that was well regarded among AARP constituents nationally. It got some attention within AARP, and I think that other entities around the state looked at that as something that they might want to, you know, piggyback off of.
Alan, in terms of what we can, I'm looking at the practical in terms of New Castle County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and do you have any ideas as to where we might go with some of these, looking at senior services for the future? I mean, we know.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No. We basically have three major activity centers. Pocasset, Ab Jones, and Garfield Park. Newark, quite honestly, we discussed it. I mean, it's hard to compete with Newark Senior Center. I mean, it's an incredibly run, offering a number of services. It almost, if I have resources, seniors being served in Newark right now, and my resources obviously are limited with all the cutbacks we're getting. The next location we're looking at is basically Hocus, because if you look at your map, there's a substantial number of seniors in the northern Delaware area, and that we're looking to expand services coming out of Hocus.
Looking to expand senior services.
Right.
Okay.
This is all senior services. And also looking to serve the population out of Garfield. That whole Route 9 is very much in the forefront of community services, in the sense that not only are we looking at the development of home ownership along Route 9, the new library is going into Route 9, which will be offering services to the communities there. There's some talk of possibly the charter school. I mean, it gets away from aging, but you know, we're developing that whole area, and simultaneously we'll be working with individuals, and this is one of the areas that probably lends itself to this, keeping seniors in their home. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest. The cost today to put an individual in assisted living is well beyond the means of anyone we serve.
Right.
So even and the government subsidized health care, you just don't get it. Even though they may have Medicare beds, it's very difficult to get one. I know some of the institutions, what they'll do if you run out of money, I mean, they'll allow that to happen and to just take, you know, they'll allow your funding from Medicare to, you know, come in and supplement. But I'm talking few, with a ever-growing population. This is one of the fastest-growing demographics in the country, is baby boomers. So all that said, we're looking possibly not only which to continue funding seniors so that we can keep them in their homes. Mm-hmm. And that's our rehab program where we get in. The other thing, once again, just, you know, not being a senior, but, you know, not having, you know, trouble with my memory, and I'll repeat myself, we're running out of funds from the federal government. Next year, looking to go to the Federal Home Loan Bank for a substantial amount of cash that we can designate for seniors so we can continue our rehab program. And and a lot of it is just seniors incapable of maintaining their homes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we can get in there and not only fix the heater and fix the roof, maybe windows, but make it accessible.
Right.
Then, you know, that goes a long way to help people age in homes. The bigger picture is what happens when they can no longer stay there and there's a need for assisted living. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know. But if we can help someone maintain their home and make it as deferred maintenance free as possible, then that's the direction we're heading in.
Got it.
To your point about lower Newark area, it's possible. I mean, you know, we went on the tour of the Newark Senior Center. I would almost prefer to fund them to provide it. I really don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Sure.
But if we can help that wheel expand a little bit, certainly. Mm-hmm. Certainly. That, you know, that is an organization that addresses the needs in Newark and Southern Newark and that area. That it's easier for me to help them as opposed to try to compete with them. And that way I can take the majority of my resources and address areas where there are no services or limited services.
And it makes sense because, you know, if you are able to pull in what resources the county does have and put them in existing organizations, and it sounds like from what Kim has said that people are beginning to take a look at, you know, what are we going to need in the future for in-home services? And
beginning to.
Yeah, beginning to, right.
You know, that's
right.
Part of our educational efforts. It's a hard thing to think about for someone who is young and vital, you know, but... Mm-hmm. People are starting to think about it, you know, because they're seeing their aging parents have difficulties, so that helps. You know, there's another piece with all of this. Delaware was, as you know, one of the states that expanded Medicaid up to 138% of the poverty level. I think that people aren't aware that that's actually going to give them better access to services for some of these people. They may not even know that they're eligible for Medicaid unless they go on to the state's marketplace website, ChooseHealthDE.
Yeah.
AARP has its own, healthlawanswers.org, and if you click Delaware, it'll refer you to that one. But if they go on there and type and answer all the right questions, they'll know if they're eligible for the Medicaid expansion, you know, with the new funding for that. And that actually, I think, might provide some extra services for people that they don't even know about. And I hope that these medical professionals can advise people of that as well, you know. that's part of Rita's camp, you know,
right,
to educate the physicians and the medical community. And she's talking about giving them incentives for operating in a more team kind of dynamic.
And it sounds like it's also something that churches could get on board with, if there could be a very simple... And I'm sorry Bob isn't here, because he's really excellent at producing these half-page flyers that can be put right into church bulletins about these various issues.
Yeah.
And he's a good one to work with on that.
A lot of the churches are already doing the carpooling and helping people within the church, and it's so insular that we don't know about it.
Right.
At least we do a lot of work with like the African-American churches around Wilmington, well, really all over the state.
you know, because they're kind of a community unto themselves. They already have some pretty sophisticated systems going there that, you know.
I was just thinking, though, that getting the word out on the Medicaid expansion and the additional services, that might be really important, because that's exactly what we're talking about, is providing those services so people can stay in their homes. You wouldn't have any kind of a summary of that, would you?
The Medicaid expansion?
The Medicaid expansion and how it affects seniors.
Yes, I could probably... actually, we had a story in the AARP bulletin in August about the Medicaid expansion and the number of people that it, you know... Well, there's about 90,000 uninsured in Delaware.
Right.
That's one piece. But we did have a number about how many additional Delawareans could benefit from Medicaid. I think I'll have to pull it. I don't have it with me.
And that would be helpful, because it would be helpful for us. Mm-hmm. You know, part of it is that if you're a council person, sometimes you do get questions about services. Mm-hmm. They may not be our services, but it's always helpful to know, even if Alan's group is not providing this, is there, how do we get people from point A to point B? Mm-hmm. And so finding out what these extra services are with this Medicaid expansion would be very useful.
I might be able to get you some, at least some numbers, and I can certainly give Jill Friedel a call, too, at the state.
Okay, that would be good.
My go-to person.
So, Alan,
this would allow,
you know,
more people to be, have both Medicaid, Medicare, be dual eligible. Is that what you're saying?
Well, well, no,
or is it
I think
for people less than
yeah, it, well,
65?
Medicaid is for anybody who is up to 130%, 138% of the poverty level. It can be any age range. It's for people with really no, very, very minimal assets, I guess, at this point, you know.
Right.
And, you know, from what I can understand from Rita Landgraf, that over the past couple of years, there's been an unprecedented amount of Medicaid applications. People who never would have thought to do it were applying for Medicaid. I guess the economic downturn really took something out of them. So, yeah, that's something a little... Medicare is for anyone over 65 that is eligible for Medicare, regardless of your income. You know. But
the expansion does cover the people who are 65 and older, if they're less than one, if they're less than 130 of the poverty line.
Well, no, I think that the Medicaid, I think everybody gets Medicare. You wouldn't get Medicare and Medicaid.
Well, there are some people who do.
There are definitely some dual eligible people who have both. It is, but I think what
But it's also very under utilized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is Becky Lester, by the way.
I think the question is, with these expansions of healthcare, what are the expansions of in-home services? That's really the question. And what I'm piggybacking on with Alan's group, I mean, you've identified as starting to use the libraries as a place for information about senior services. Then expanding the services in the currently available activity centers within the county. And then, you know, if there's... Certainly toward the southern part of the county, the Newark Senior Center is a place that would be, that might be capable with some funding to, of being able to expand some of these services. But you don't really foresee, and you know, expand creating other activity centers within the county, though.
It would be difficult unless there were some sort of funding source, but population dictates services. We follow the population. Obviously, you get an expansion, a jump, let's say, in the southern portion of the state. Yeah, we'll go down there and fight where we can provide the services.
Right.
There's no reason we can't work out of schools and things of that nature. It's just we have to get in. You know, give us a chance, find us a place where we can get in there, and we will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's and listen to this. Maybe it's possible to start going into the neighborhoods and offering these information centers. I mean, we already have people doing community outreach. Mm-hmm. It would not be a stretch to expand that community outreach to start to include these services as informational. And once again, we're neutral. You know, this is we don't provide services. You know, we can just inform people what the services are. And certainly, if we can get someone to work with us to go to these community services and piggyback our activities, that would be great.
Okay. Okay, that's good.
I just want to interject. This is Deborah Young, to provide you a resource for knowing what services. I can't list them all out, but it's the essentially through the Medicaid program, it's the Diamond State Health Plan, and then it's the Diamond State Health Plan Plus. And they, I don't recall what delineates the two separately, but I know that there are different and additional services for those who are beneficiaries of the Diamond State Health Plan Plus.
Okay.
And that's, I don't know what's happening behind us, so I might have to figure that out in a minute. But but that's on the state website, and I believe it's under the state website where they have Medicaid and Medicare services.
Okay. Very good. Okay.
Not good.
I think, Kim, if there's anything that you see from the county end that we can help in terms of the legislation, you know, that would be great. I mean, I realize that you guys are going to focus mainly on the state, but if you see anything that we can get involved in, and also, I'll just say this, if you hear of any grants that you think Alan could be take advantage of, that would be really awesome to get some synergy going there. I mean, one of the most popular, I'm pretty sure that one of the most popular publications in Newcastle County is that 50 plus publication that you did, you know, that the request came out of this committee and you guys worked on.
It's called Vital or something?
It's a little green brochure that has all
benefits,
the county services.
Older Delawareans.
The Newcastle County Guide to Service.
Yeah.
Of course. Our logo is right on the front.
Yes, exactly. But more, we want more of that kind of stuff, I think, would be very helpful. And
well, from what I can gather, people were just so hungry for the information, you know.
What is it? It's like on its third printing. I know there were two printings during the previous administration.
I know when I first came in January, we had one. We did one and put it out, so we're probably coming due on another.
They just sent, I'm a provider, so they just sent information out to sort of re-up on that and see who's interested in being involved in it. So a new one should be coming out for, I would assume it's for 2014.
That's great. Okay. Well, I know that we've got tech support coming for Deborah's presentation, but do you want to just start, Deborah, by giving us a background on...
If we have something else we could chat about for like a few minutes, I was going to give you, I have great pictures to go with that story.
Oh, okay. All right. Here comes the tech support.
Okay. Nobody touched it.
Seriously, it's kind of weird.
A just reminder that my USB key's in there with information on it. Don't just pull it out. That's like cutting its head off.
Just like a tech guy.
We have someone dedicated to meeting the community.
They gave us that screen.
Okay, so that basically goes in the evening.
Okay.
And we've been focusing on Route 9.
Okay.
It's first, it's federally funded.
Okay.
And as such, has to comply with
it.
So, and that tends to be where we are. That said, you know, we're more than willing to, you know, structure things. Right now, we're going to focus on events as opposed to informational. But the library system is just a natural. That tends to be where we get our information out to the public. We really have a lot of people in our library system.
Well, we've usually kept this to about an hour anyway.
Yeah, that's my goal. My goal was like 10 minutes. Maybe 10 minutes. And pictures to keep everybody interested.
Good, positive.
Where's the button that I hit to? Is there my mouse? I'm Deborah Young, and my company is Empowerability LLC. Briefly about me, I'm an occupational therapist by background. I've been an OT for 18 years, but I specialize in space planning and design for inclusive environments. I've got to bite this a little bit, sorry. There we go. The purpose of this presentation is to discuss with you a little bit about something that we've been working on, and I'll talk about why we wanted to bring it up to the Subcommittee on Aging as well. We're looking at Iron Hill Park, and the purpose of this presentation is to talk about the work that we've been doing to try and create a universal design trail within Iron Hill Park. And the history behind that goes a little like this. That's my handsome husband and our cute little furry child. And my husband is an outdoorsy kind of guy. He has, he sustained a C5 cervical fifth and sixth vertebrae spinal cord injury at the age of 18. I met him in a bar a few years later. But, and we've been together for a long time. And the one thing that I know about my husband is that he loves being outside and he loves the outdoors. He hikes, he likes to do as much as he can. This is actually in Academy Hill where we live. There's an Iron Mine Reserve Trail pattern all throughout, which is great. However, as you can see, he's in his power chair here, which he's kind of has the Humvee of power chairs, which many people do not have, but he does. He got hurt on the job, and that was one thing that he is benefiting from the standpoint of having some help from funding. And so he has this great Humvee power chair that lets him do a lot of this great trail. You can see this on this trail here. This is part of the trail as well. And there are some ramp areas to get onto it if it's very steep. You can see a really high sign right there that tells you a little history about the trail. Some of the inclines that his chair is somewhat able to do to a point, and then I get nervous because I think he's going to flip over somewhere, but he's a little crazy in that chair. A few people in this room could probably attest to that. But it gives you an idea of this is a really great spot of this trail where there's a really cool area that they're showing you the history, but he just can't even access it here. I had been talking a lot about the fact that I tell the story that there's a few times that I was out doing a job on an appointment with somebody, and my husband would call me, I'm stuck. Where are you? I'm stuck on the trail. So even in that Humvee of a power chair, he would get stuck on a route in somewhere, and he would have to call for help for someone to kind of save him and pull him out. And it's either myself, and we actually have a few neighbors now that know if Bill's calling you, there's usually a reason, and he's probably stuck somewhere. Something's probably happened to his chair. And there's many stories that go behind that. I was having this discussion with Valerie and a few other people, and found out that the friends at Iron Hill were actually looking at the possibility of locating a space within Iron Hill Park where they would create what they're calling an accessible trail. So it was their concept from the very beginning. And with that, I thought to myself, well, this would be great. I'd love to be involved in this project, if not professionally, just from a personal level, because Iron Hill Park is not far from where I live. We've gone there before. This all sort of came about 2 years ago now. So we were looking at 2011, before it's even expanded to the point where it has the great dog park and everything else that's in there. And I'm like, oh, this would be great. Mind you, in 2011, they were talking about an accessible trail. In 2010, that was the 20-year anniversary of the ADA. In that time frame, in 2010, they actually started to put legislation in the ADA about what could be done for recreational areas to make them more accessible to persons with disabilities. And they did not have that in the original ADA back in 1990. And that all of that now is enforceable as of March 2012. So in our discussions in the beginning with what's happening with Iron Hill Park, I let them know, because it was 2011, said, well, if you're going to do something now, you don't have to follow what's going to be enforceable with the ADA as of March 2012, but it's advisable that you do. It doesn't matter at this point anyway, because we're well beyond that. And so consider whatever could be done at Iron Hill Park at this point has to be something that at least follows through with ADA guidelines. But my hope, and what we talked about a lot more than ADA, was talking about universal design. And I have a few things up here in regards to what, why, and what for universal design for a nature trail. But the first thing I want to talk to you about is that a lot of people don't realize that ADA guidelines, where they actually came from. ADA guidelines come from anthropometric measurements or body measurements that they took from the military, and I always get it wrong, it's either the 50s and 60s or the 60s and 70s. And then they take those measurements, and that's how they generated the ADA guidelines. So consider this. Consider that the military is mostly men in, we hope, at least good shape and good health. And now they're taking those body measurements and using that to represent a disability community. And that's why you know that a grab bar is to be placed between 34 and 36 inches above a finished floor. And all those other informational pieces in ADA, specifications of where things should be installed and placed, it's based off of that data and not actually off of persons with disabilities. So you want to consider universal design on this. On the other hand, is looking at specifically human factors. It's looking at somebody's size, somebody, if they're right-handed or left-handed, and what their specific abilities are, cognition, vision. Consider everybody sitting in this room. I'm 5'3". Look at your hands for a minute. This is the size and shape of my hand. I remember sitting next to a gentleman on a plane who at least was 6'4", over 200 pounds. I thought to myself, he's got to have been a linebacker. In talking to him for a little bit, he's like, he used to play for Virginia Tech. We were talking about what we did. And in trying to explain to him what universal design was, all I had to do was tell him, put your hand out. It was like a bear paw. His hand was like this big. And I put my hand next to his, and I said, and it was just ridiculous. We laughed. And I said, well, I look at your hand, and I think, how are you managing hitting the buttons on your cell phone? How are you turning door handles? How are you manipulating the same things I'm manipulating? You're like a foot taller than me. How are you managing in that same space that I also have to manage in? And that's universal design. And when you universally design a product, services, and space, it not only helps persons with disabilities because it's meeting their needs, but it's meeting everybody else's needs too. Okay. So, and this is a horrible slide. It has way too many things on it, but I wanted to just point out the fact that there is so much research out there that shows the impact of nature on a person's health. And there's some really cool things. In 1984, Wilson, he created the term biophilia, which is essentially the need for someone to be around and be with living things and how that makes us feel and what that does for us. They're doing research on therapeutic horticulture and depression. They're actually starting to work, that OT's occupational therapy. In Sweden, some occupational therapists are working on what the effects of nature is on a person. And then there's this really cool thing from Japan, the Shinrin Yoku, which is a matter of they are taking people and having them do a walk through the woods, and they're calling it forest bathing, versus somebody walking through an urban environment and how it's impacting many things about their health and how it impacts them psychosocially. But you can see there's a lot of research out there that shows the benefits of being with nature. I mean, if you had an office space with a window in front of you, would you rather look at a brick wall or a beautiful garden? It's like sort of a no-nonsense kind of thing. So accessible, in considering looking at trying to take this park space, this trail, which is a little bit different than a park. I mean, think Glasgow Park. It's a great park. It's a great park, Val. It is a great park. And every time I go, there's something really cool that's new that's there. But it's a park. It's not quite a trail. It's very different. And trying to maintain the aesthetics and what a trail is really about versus making it into just another park. So first thing that we had to consider was, oh, my button's not working. There we go. Yep, good. This is Iron Hill Park. First thing we have to consider is the surface and what kind of surface material. The ADA will say something that is not slip resistant, well, a firm surface that's not slip resistant. So they are actually putting into effect, it's the National Center on Accessibility, I believe they're out in Indiana. They have done a lot of research of trails and trying to gauge what kind of surface is going to meet, still sort of make it a trail so that you don't have to pave it. You can pave it if you want, but still trying to determine how that surface is going to, one, cost when you first put it in, and then two, what it's going to do to maintain it. So they're doing a lot of research on that. And so in considering, this is red clay, there was talk about possibly paving it. That might be, even though there's an expense up front, the maintenance is less in the end. And those are the things to consider. We're not trying to pave the entire trail, the entire area of all the trails. Possibly it's just a paved area for where this universal design trail is. It always brings up that song, what was that?
take Paradise and
pave Paradise.
And that's always when I think about it. But you don't want to pave everything, I promise you. It's actually, I'm all for trying to keep as natural a surface trail as possible, but understanding that that might be more money and maintenance thereafter. And that's what has to be weighed, and it's certainly not my decision. But there's research on that. So considering, you know, he's able to get through most of this with his power chair. But what about some of our residents who are using walkers or canes or somebody pushing a stroller? Or there's plenty of people who are biking over there and kids that are skateboarding and doing some crazy biking over there. But consider all the different users of this space. And there is an area that has been paved, and it's been there forever now, and it's still there, so looking at the maintenance of it as well. But see, these are some of your different users here. And you can see these are some actual accessible and universal design trails that are in the United States right now. The lady sitting down with her cane. What's cool about that is that's actually an area that they used wood to create platforms to go over really high areas where there was too much incline. Because the ADA does have requirements of how much slope there has to be. Understanding that you can't just completely make everything flat, but perhaps it's doing something like that instead, dealing with a sloped area, but still allowing someone to be able to view over to a really nice spot in the trail. But consider all the different users, including these users. Because, we have not just older adults that are going to be using a wheelchair, we have animals that might want to be there too. The other thing to consider is also looking at if there's an essential element within the park that you want them to be able to view. So up at the top left, you can see it still creates enough space for people to go by, but then that little cutout to maybe have a viewing area of whatever's on the other side of that so that people can still pass by. And what you want to consider with, ADA will say, okay, you have to have, if you're thinking of a museum, for instance, or a space, you have to have a 36-inch wide door. Well, that's great. You can let somebody in, but that doesn't mean that they can actually access and manipulate and be a part of the exhibit, so to speak. So consider, see this, the child in the wheelchair down there, she could still access that exhibit or that space within the park and trail area. This person can still access and see the sign, whereas that sign by our house, really high, he wasn't able to read anything and actually get close enough to it. So it's a matter of looking at how things are set up for all the users, and not just being able to get in there, but to be a part of what's happening and participate. This is a park actually down in St. Louis. It's a water feature. Anybody can get to it. They can access that, whether they are a stroller, a wheelchair, walker, cane, whatever. And it's perfectly universally designed. This is one of the, and I'm not picking at the park, mind you, because there's some great stuff that's going on over at the trail. And this was done by the Boy Scouts, right? The Boy Scouts put these in because it was a couple that actually could not find their way out. So considering universal design, this is a good start, but you want to consider how you're representing and communicating. You want it to be simple and intuitive. You want the information to be perceptible. Something like this is actually a trailhead map sign that's in the front of Yosemite, and it's not the best of pictures for you on this slide, but it gives you an idea. There's pictographs on there. There's words on there. It's a little bit bigger. It was at a height that anybody could be able to read it. It was color-coded, so it gives alternative means of communication, especially if you have people who don't have a literacy level that can maybe read. They can still use the symbols. Or if they're having any visual difficulty, they could still utilize the color coding piece of it. This is also another thing. This was in that park down in St. Louis that I love. It was right out there. It was nice and bright. Even though it says map on there, it's at least something that gets you over there. It even has the symbol for you to use your cell phone to be able to get information on the park if they wanted to do that. It even uses a nice lever handle to be able to be easy to open. And what's cool is then they correspond that with the little signs throughout the park itself. So again, simple and intuitive for you to locate your way. And this is that park again, but you may not be able to read anything on those signs, but you know that that's a sign that corresponds to the map that tells you that something is there for that park to you to see. Okay? And we get to the little things and keeping with some of the details of the park. Here's the picnic area, or at least one of the picnic areas that's over at the trail right now. I took a picture of this. This is at a rest stop. I want to say it was in Virginia. And you can see on the other side of it, this was in the front of the rest stop. It was by itself. And you're like, okay, that's great. Well, someone in a wheelchair can pull up there. And I say, yes, that's nice, but let's challenge the fact that this was by itself. All the other non-handicap tables were in the back where everybody else could sit. So essentially, if you needed to use this, to be able to sit at the table, you had to choose this table. And then you couldn't sit with anybody else. It was just this table. A universal design approach instead looks at Make all the tables the same. Don't have one separate table. It shouldn't be the separate but equal kind of thing. It should be seamless and invisible. You shouldn't even say, well, that's the table where somebody that uses a cane, a walker, or a wheelchair has to sit. They should just be able to sit wherever they can sit. And it sort of blends in and nobody knows the difference, okay? So small things. Considering things like a water fountain. This water fountain I took a picture of, it's actually on the Rehoboth Boardwalk. It's on the side closest to the retailers. The other side of the boardwalk, closer to the ocean, are the regular water fountains for that are the non-handicapped ones, where you can see this one has our little symbol. Bill calls it his symbol, that's my husband. And I thought to myself, well, that's silly, so now they've spent twice as much money for two different types of water fountains. Why not cost contain, make it pretty, and get a water fountain that does everything, double duty for any user, including children small enough, and your dog. So there's your universal design fountain instead. They're even getting savvy enough now to give you a bottle filler. So considering all the users, and perhaps that might be a little more money, but it still might be less money than buying separate water fountains. Why do you have to have a separate water fountain? Funding. So you're like, okay, well, that's great, Deborah. We would love to do this universal design trail, but where do you expect to get the money? We did put through a grant to Lowe's in hopes that that would go through, but they did not fund our project, unfortunately. There is a grant that I have put together for Safeway. Safeway does a lot for community, local community projects, as well as for persons with disabilities. So under that guise, that's what we're using this for, but we're going to be putting through that grant, hopefully soon, to see what they say. And they're all number ones. And then Delaware Land and Water Conservation Trust Fund. I was speaking with Kendall Summers from DenRec, and she talked to me about this grant that's actually available specific to parks, recreation, and trails in Delaware. So I'm in the process of starting that application to see if it could be funded through that as well. And that is hope. So right now we are looking at trying to get funding. We wanted to let you all know about it because this impacts anybody that's in the area. It's not just persons with disabilities. It's grandparents that want to bring their grandkids to the park. It's any of the residents that want to come to the park, and giving the park the ability to still meet the needs of the users that are going to be participating in its use. Any questions?
Deborah, just out of curiosity, about how much money do you think you need to develop this?
I'm trying to remember the grant off the top of my head. I want to say, didn't we say it was like $100,000?
$100,000.
Yeah. And because if we were looking at paving, the paving is what's expensive. That takes up the chunk. I mean, it was at least 2/3 of what the cost would be. We were looking at the initial meetings with the Friends of Iron Hill. They were looking at where the trail would be, and originally they had it in a few different spots. We were looking at a trail that would be about a mile long. It would be a mile loop per ADA. Now you have to make sure that if it's going to be an accessible trail, you in the trailhead there has to be a sign that says how long it's going to be, if there's rest stops, and what the slope's going to be, so that people are aware of what they're getting into when they get there.
Sure.
But that mile loop was going to cost like $100,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the bulk of that is the paving.
Yes.
Do you have, this is just, you know, one thing, for those of you who don't know, the Iron Hill Park is actually in my district. And so it would be very interesting to me to see, to get a copy of your budget and any of the grants. Because one thing that I can do is, one, letters of support. You know, I'm always happy to do a letter of support. And if we have the information, I can write a more intelligent letter of support. You know, the other thing is, I think about this committee, I mean, you know, you guys are out and about and you get publications, and if you see anything that might be applicable to this, you know, either forward it to me or forward it directly to Deborah, but just trying to keep people in the loop that this is what you need, and you know, these might be some really good resources to find some other grant opportunities, you know.
That would be great. And this is actually, we're coming back around with this again, because we were on a little bit of a hiatus. But in coming back around with it, it's actually very timely, because Delaware, DenRec is actually in the process of starting to promote what they have, the spatial analysis to determine where parks are, and if there are enough parks within a certain proximity for people to utilize, and it all comes back down to health. For people, one, to be active, and then also to be able to have a park that they could potentially walk to. So I'm not sure how this will tie in, but essentially it's nice that Delaware is looking at that, and DenRec is also looking at the current parks that are in Delaware and what their accessibility is like. And I think that's due to everything that happened in the ADA. So this is a very timely project with some of these that are occurring in the state of Delaware.
Thank you. Any questions for Deborah? Awesome presentation.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that's so cool is that you didn't just learn about the project. It really gave you such a nice idea about ADA and all of your information. I say we give her a hand. Thank you. Well, it's going to be hard for anybody to top that, but I'll go on to other. Does anyone have anything else that needs to be brought forward?
Could I pass a flyer around for a financial security event we're doing?
Sure, absolutely. This is the time, exactly the time to do that. And do you want to give us a little more detail about this, Kim?
Absolutely. Well, of course, one of AARP's big portfolios that we address nationwide is called My Money. And we've always been real proponents of retirement security and, you know, having the resources to age successfully. So one of the things that it was the result of someone in my office, John Barnes, who some of you might know, because everybody knows John Barnes. He forged a partnership with the AKA sorority, which apparently really has a lot of power among that particular African-American female community. It's really well regarded. So we partnered with them on this event. They're helping us with promotion and whatnot. So they're doing a lot of marketing to their members of this particular chapter, Zeta Omega. So it's going to be a morning event with breakfast and lunch. For African-American women, that's really who they are trying to promote to. And the two keynote speakers are both AARP affiliated. Jean Setzvind is actually our Vice President for Financial Security out of Washington. She's been to Delaware a couple times. I had her on the Alma City show before. She's been interviewed in the papers locally. And Lynette Calfani-Cox is the money coach, and she's done like blog chats for us and Facebook chats. She's written materials for us and recorded commercials on AARP TV. We have a rural TV station now that's national. Yeah. We found it's a good way to reach those rural communities that don't always have the same access that other people do. So, you know, I think it's going to be a great event. We would really love any help promoting it because it's a good opportunity to learn about how you can really secure a good retirement now. Mm-hmm. People, you know, you don't really want to wait till you're 60, you know. So the age range for this is really 25 and up.
Okay.
As soon as you start working, get your first job, start to think about what can I do now to, you know, start to think about later. So, anyway.
Very good. Any other information that folks want to share?
Well, I can put in a plug, Valerie George, I can put in a plug for Alpha Kappa Alpha. I've been to a couple of their sorority events, and they are one excited group of ladies. They really encourage people to bring their children of any age, any background, it doesn't matter. And they encourage them to go on to college, to better themselves, to take, they have like little leadership classes for all ages, and then continue with the alumni. You know, I think the last one I was at, there was everything from like three-year-olds to ladies who literally were, you know, their granddaughters who were also in the sorority, were helping them up the steps in, and the food was really good. So,
yeah.
For no other reason, bring a friend, have some lunch.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do a really good job. It's a really, quite an asset to the community.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of the connection to the community until I started working with them. And I didn't know that, well, of course, Michelle Obama is an Alpha Kappa, and she speaks at their annual meeting every year. So this is a real point. This is really where these young women aspire towards, you know,
mm-hmm.
to join this sorority and use it as a way to network after they graduate from college. So You know, I think it's going to be a really beneficial and fun event, and one of the things I'm working on now is maybe trying to get some a radio remote with one of the stations that's popular in that community. So, you know, I'm trying to get a lot of people there because I think it's important.
My boss is a pastor of a large African-American church, so I'll make sure he gets a bunch of copies and passes it out to his members.
Please do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a real point for promotion with this that we've also pursued.
Kim, if you want us to distribute that, feel free to send us the flyer, and then that way you could give it to Reverend Bullock and he can make copies.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I'll send you the PDF, which you can print out on any color printer, on your own.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Any other announcements?
I'd like to share just a little bit of information about Brandywine Village Network. I'm assuming that most people know what we do, but just in case if you don't, we're really focusing on this mission of what we talked about today, of helping seniors age in place comfortably in their own homes, recognizing again that the financial future doesn't permit many people to move into assisted living or otherwise. Oh, thanks. and in addition to meeting some of those basic needs, such as, you know, we'll tune up make sure that you're household repairs are getting done, we'll take you to your doctor's appointment. We provide the family feel to it also. I have members calling and saying, I can't believe you did that for me, you're becoming my family. And so it's really just about a network of people caring for one another. From as simple as putting books on your shelf so you feel like you're living at home, to making sure you get to your dialysis appointment. You know, we cover everything that individuals really need. But of course, we want to make sure that our village is sustained for the future and that we're not just doing this now, but that we really create a future for our members. And so, you know, we are looking for different funding opportunities just to make sure that this is a future that we have, whether it's through scholarship programs, so you can scholarship a member to an individual to be a member with us for a full year, or otherwise. I really believe in our program and think that we're making a significant impact on the community, and we want to expand that and reach more and more people.
That's great. And I think Alan had already mentioned possibilities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's part of the reason we do this, mm-hmm. is to get people to connect. And I do know at one point Dory was going to come and talk about it, and we had another presentation.
Okay.
That included that clip from the Village Project out of Boston.
Yeah, Beacon Hill.
Yes, Beacon mm-hmm. Hill, right. But that was very interesting because it kind of gave picture mm-hmm. people a big picture of what you guys did. But I think for the purposes of, you know, of the future of the committee, I think where we lie is really with the county services, mm-hmm. and then encouraging through connections how, you know, I mean, Alan, is talking to these people and work in the activity center, is that something you would like to explore more?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, to us, libraries and activity centers.
Libraries and activity centers,
I mean,
the two
are linked now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That these are fast becoming mm-hmm. avenues for individuals in the community, not just elderly, mm-hmm. but everyone, to garner information about services mm-hmm. provided. It's just amazing how many people walk through the doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I think is so cool is to revision the libraries, given, you know, I just got the statistics on the ebook usage, you mm-hmm. know, what do we do, you know, if we no longer have real books? I mean, it's going to take a long time for all of this to be replaced, but to have the opportunity to use the libraries for these other services, who's the best person for folks to talk to if they want to make use of that?
You can start with me. Or Diana Brown.
Okay. You
either
or Diana Brown. Okay.
Yeah, either or. Whatever, you know.
Because I could see, you know, what a great opportunity using the healthcare connection with West High Health to explain the healthcare changes.
Absolutely. And understand, and you've probably noticed it, as each new library comes online, the design is different.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes more community oriented as opposed to walking in and having a card catalog and all the books on the wall.
Right, right.
It's now filled with meeting rooms and things of that nature and almost the point where, oh yeah, by the way, we have books.
Yeah.
So it really has. And if, like I said, if you see the design, I guess Claymont is our newest library coming online. And when you walk in, immediately you realize this is not the library I grew up with. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. It's the way of the future as a community center gets to go.
That's great. And if there's any vision that you guys have of things, please make that. We want people to be connecting here, so that would be really great. So.
Absolutely.
And Deborah, again, please let us know how things are going. If there's any way, you know, Sue and I can help in terms of support stuff, that would be terrific.
Thank you.
I'm thinking maybe a meeting toward the end of November. Does that make sense to people?
Yes.
And maybe by that time, Kim, I can pull in Chris Oakes and some of the folks from the state, and we can talk about, you know, is there some synergy that we can get with, say, the activity centers and the libraries and what's coming down with some of the information that they're doing as well?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, good.
Just one point of interest.
Sure.
Alan Mattis, record. I lost my map maker. She was an intern for us from University of Delaware.
Oh, I met her, the intern. Yeah, yes. I met her at the Urban League.
She's wonderful. She got a job. So nerve. So
these things happen.
In Philadelphia. Really a great job, as a matter of fact.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, as you can see from our work. So there might be a little delay in producing the information, but we will get it out.
We understand. I mean, you know.
I just got lucky on that one, and I told her to research that job carefully, make sure it's what she wanted, but you know, it turned out it was. So we'll keep you posted on our ability to...
On the updates.
Right.
That's great.
Right.
That's great. We really appreciate that. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. And, you know, should we look at... we could go with... November, the council meetings would be the 12th and the 26th. The 26th is right before Thanksgiving. Sounds good to people? Would you prefer the 12th or go later in the month?
I'd actually prefer, later in the month. We have a lot of events the first couple weeks of November.
Okay. All right.
That's just my opinion. I mean, I'll accommodate whatever.
I'm flexible.
That's fine.
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. Do we want to say the 26th at 11?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, it's good to see everyone, and we'll see you at the end of November then. Since we're technically not a committee, we don't need to do the adjournment, so we'll see you in 2 months.
Thank you.